Football is back. And so are we on the Sunday Morning Grind podcast. We are so back that we're back to numbering shows again, Greg. Josh Taylor, Greg Finley, episode number 43, officially numbered, because there is an unofficial number of episodes, but this is the official number 43. And this is a good one. We dubbed this. We had to come back and we had to go back and really think about some good Pittsburgh athletes that wore number 43. And the way too obvious one is Troy Polamalu, although we will pay respect and homage to the OG. But we had to reach back and find a good one, and we went over to PPG Paints Arena to find our name for this episode, Greg.
We go with Connor Sheary today.
Puppy Power himself. I love it. I love it. This is a good one. Former Stanley Cup champion. One of the original kids on the Sid and the Kids line.
Mm-hmm.
So Connor Sheary, the episode this is named after, episode number 43. Although we're not talking Penguins, we're talking Steelers straight up here. Although the George Jones episode was kicked around for a quick second, but we thought Connor Sheary might be a little bit more identifiable. I remember when George Jones played for the Steelers. Greg, I don't think you probably particularly do.
No.
That means me. It's just me showing my age, and I don't know if I feel like doing that right around now. So, yeah, we'll stick with Connor Sheary for the time being. But we are going to get into this first preseason game, Steelers and Seahawks. We'll kind of slip into a little bit of a preview of the second one. They face Jacksonville coming up on Saturday. We'll talk about that as well. And then, after we're done with the football talk, we got to get back into our favorite news headline game. We did it for whole episodes at a time. Not to mention the fact we found more material to add to the open, so we got to try that out for a spin. We will play Is This a Thing in the second segment of this show. But, Greg, let's get started with the first half of this here voyage, and let's talk about that first preseason game. Steelers beating the Seahawks 32-25 at the newly branded Acrisure Stadium. I'm keeping a counter of how many times I get it wrong. I've actually done pretty well so far. But I think the story coming out of this game, and it was the thing that everybody wanted to talk about and probably some folks felt they needed to talk about, it was the quarterback play. All three quarterbacks in this game, Mitchell Trubisky, who started, played two series. Mason Rudolph played most of the second quarter. I must say all the second quarter, most of the first quarter, all the second quarter and a chunk of the third quarter. And then Kenny Pickett finished it from there. Each of them threw at least one touchdown pass. Kenny Pickett threw two, also converted a two-point conversion attempt to Connor Hayward and threw the game-winning pass to Tyler Vaughns with 3 seconds left on the clock. I think the one position group that you can't complain about going from week one to week two of the preseason is the quarterbacks, Greg.
All three quarterbacks did what they needed to do in order to make this a competition. And It probably isn't a competition because Mitchell Trubisky is more than likely going to be the starter. But I would say that Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett both did enough where Mike Tomlin goes, at least, okay, they're at least giving me something to think about. They're at least making it a competition. It's not Trubisky is leaps and bounds better than the other two. And granted, Kenny Pickett went up against a third-team defense, but he also had a third-team offense.
He did.
So the fact that he went right down the field the way he did after the entire crowd went nuts for him was pretty awesome. He got sacked a couple of times. The offensive line wasn't great.
The third-team offensive line.
Right. But he still was able to overcome all those things, make some throws, make plays happen, and he got them a win. Now, third-team defense, strip sack on Drew Locke.
Mm-hmm. Mark Robinson, great play for the rookie linebacker.
On the blind side hit, knocked the ball loose. All right, Kenny, you get the ball at midfield. Let's see what you can do. All he had to do was get him in field goal range, and he did it better. He got him a touchdown.
Did that have a feel, that late turnover, to getting the ball, to engineering a late game-winning drive? Didn't that have a familiar feel to it for you? It felt super familiar for me.
And the same one against Seattle the last time?
Just in the fact that they're getting back to it, and I think they want to get back to this style of play. Look, have the defense make a play when they need a play. Get the offense the ball back. Go win the game. It has that feel to it because Steelers didn't do a lot as far as turning the ball over. There was that failed fourth down in the previous drive. But at the same time, they found a way for the defense, with their backs against the wall, come up with a big turnover, turn the ball over to the offense, go win the game. We've seen that so much in the past couple decades with this organization, especially in the previous 10 to 15 years, when this defense was one of the best defenses in the game. Come up with key turnovers in key situations, turn the ball over to the offense, let them bring it home. They did that in the second half of this game. Now, as far as the quarterbacks go, you're right. I agree with you on this. All three quarterbacks did what they needed to do. They also did what Mike Tomlin wanted them to do, which is move the offense down the field, take care of the ball, and be efficient. They, all three of those guys, did what they needed to do in that regard. Mason Rudolph comes in after Mitch Trubisky played two series. And I'm glad that we saw Mitch Trubisky do something that we haven't seen a Steelers quarterback do quite frequently in a long time. First possession of the game, first drive, you start on your own end, you get down the field, you move the ball, you convert third downs, and it results in a touchdown. That is something we have not seen this offense do a lot in recent years. And I'm not talking the past couple. I'm talking like the past six or seven. This team has been awful on their first drive of a game. Mitchell Trubisky comes in, first drive leading this team on the field in a Steelers uniform, takes him down the field and leads him to a touchdown, throws a touchdown pass. He did what they needed him to do. The second drive didn't turn out the way they wanted to. That's how the game works. But he did what they needed him to do when it was the most important for him to do it. Mason Rudolph had that really ugly play on that first snap. Offensive line didn't do a great job of protecting him, and he paid for it. Two snaps later, drops a rainbow to George Pickens, who, by the way, looked really, really good in his first ever professional game. I thought Mason Rudolph overcame an obstacle that he might not have always overcame in the past couple years. But he did it this time around and threw a touchdown pass. And Kenny Pickett, you laid it out pretty well as far as everything he did and everything that he needed to do coming into a situation where everybody in that stadium wanted him to do well, cheering for him when he comes on the field. His first time as a professional quarterback, and he leads a scoring drive on his first snap in a professional uniform. All of that stuff, as far as what each of these guys needed to do, like you mentioned, they accomplished them all. But it wasn't the fact that they just went out and did it. They went out and did it amidst the circumstances surrounding them, and that's what made it more important.
I'm hoping that George Pickens will get some reps with Kenny Pickett this week.
I'd love to see that happen, because he did pretty well playing with Mitch Trubisky in that first drive, caught a couple passes there. He made plays even when Mason Rudolph was in the game. They moved him around, and they're going to continue to do that, which makes me feel really optimistic about him. And yeah, Pickett to Pickens, I want to see that happen a lot coming up here in this game in Jacksonville.
George Pickens is really fun, and we knew he would be.
Yeah.
But to take it to that level, I mean, that catch, I mean, it was a great throw by Rudolph, the way that he put it right on the money.
In the shirt pocket,
but it
bang.
Was such a good catch and great footwork to get both feet down. I mean, this guy already looks like an NFL player, and he's just out of college.
There was another good catch that he made that probably wasn't talked about a lot, but I thought it was an impressive catch. I want to say it was Mason Rudolph that threw this ball. It was toward the sideline, and he was pretty heavily covered.
Oh, yeah.
But he still managed to get himself free, catch this ball at a place where the defender could not catch, and his body was at an awkward position, still managed to reach behind him and pull this catch in and get a first down. And on top of that, he did it in tight coverage, but he also did it in a situation where they needed him to come up with a play, and he did. When you can find a receiver that's reliable, that you can throw to when you need to make a play, and that guy makes a play, that's a guy that quarterbacks are going to develop confidence in, whether it's Trubisky, whether it's Rudolph, whether it's Kenny Pickett. If you can see that continue to develop with George Pickens, you got something dangerous on your hands.
I believe I texted you after that catch, and I was like, dude, what a catch. I mean, it was a bullet, and he just looked up, and it hit him right where it needed to. He got his hands up, and he made a great catch. I mean, Pickens could very well be the best wide receiver on this team, and I don't think it's outlandish to say that after one preseason game.
If he's not now, he probably will be by the end of the season. And that's nothing against Deontay Johnson, who just signed his contract extension, and I think he deserved the money that he got. It's nothing against Chase Claypool, whom I still think, despite maybe not having all the marbles rattling in the same direction, can still do some things physically that make him pretty good. It's nothing against those two guys. It's nothing even against the guys like Calvin Austin III or even Miles Boykin or some of the other guys they brought in, Steven Sims, who made plays, Gunnar Olszewski, who made plays in that first drive of the game. And Kenny Pickett talked about it this week. He said, look, this guy just finds ways to get open. we might see more of Gunnar Olszewski used in this offense and not just as a return guy, which was the main job they really signed him to do, because he's an all-pro kick returner and punt returner. Well, he's the guy who could be involved in this offense that there may be a package or two where they insert him just to make a play in the slot, and he can probably do that maybe in the sub-package. But George Pickens, his ability, the size, the athleticism, the speed, the absolutely sure hands that he has. If it's thrown in his direction and he gets a hand on it, he's going to pull it into his body. All those things I love. But there's one little thing I'm going to remind everybody. Where did George Pickens play in college? He played for the Roman Reigns of college football. He played at Georgia. Nothing but studs came out of that team from last season. Nothing but studs. All those guys, they went in the first and second round. It had 90s, 2000s Miami-type feel as far as that draft class for Georgia. That whole team just cranked out studs that came out. And George Pickens probably was not even one of the top three or four guys they mentioned in that draft class coming out of Georgia. He might shine brightest out of that class by the time this season's over.
I agree. Yep. I thought it was a steal when they got him, and I still think it's a steal when they got him.
And you've heard a lot of draft analysts say, hey, if this kid keeps his head on straight, stays healthy, and does what he's capable of doing, he could be the steal of the draft. Quite a few said that.
And the Steelers always do well with drafting wide receivers, and they look like they've got another one on their hands. I'm very excited to see just how far he can go.
If we're talking about drafting receivers and Kevin Colbert's track record, that's a really damn good swan song, getting George Pickens and Calvin Austin III, whom we did not see in that first preseason game because he was not available. We still haven't seen him yet.
You think this we'll see him on Saturday?
I'd hope to. I'd hope to see him Saturday. I'd hope to get a chance to see Calvin Austin III, because if he's healthy, he's a guy that can produce. He's a guy that can help this team. And I like the fact that him and Pickens are roommates, and they feed off each other. They talk to each other a lot, and they both attack practice with the same mentality. They want to come in, get prepared, get ready, and get better to be guys that can contribute to this offense. And there's a collective ethos that's starting to brew and gel with this group. And it's not just the receivers. It's not just the running backs. It's not just the offensive line and tight ends. And it doesn't start with the skill position guys. It's starting at the top with the quarterbacks. That's what you want. Trubisky is actually, you know, displaying that trait. Kenny Pickett is displaying that trait. Mason Rudolph is displaying that trait. These guys are trying to set the tone with the guys around them, and I think we're seeing that happen slowly but surely. It's in increments. But I think if that comes to pass, if that actually develops the way it could be really, really fun to watch, especially in an offense that now suits not only the quarterbacks that they have on the roster, but the skill players around them that can make plays also.
Moving on to the defense. A little disappointed with Devin Bush, I would say, is what a lot of people have been saying this week.
That's the understatement of the week, maybe even of the month.
Yeah.
It would be easy if I could say, oh, it's just Devin Bush. It's not, because I can say the same thing about Robert Spillane.
And both of them are fighting for a job, and neither of them are taking it right now.
Right. It's like chasing two rabbits. He who chases two rabbits catches none. And it's really nothing against the coaching staff, because I've already read a column that says, oh, well, Brian Flores has to make Devin Bush better. Does he? I mean, if he doesn't, is that really Brian Flores' fault?
No.
Because my thing is, if he doesn't make Devin Bush better and he doesn't make Robert Spillane better, whose fault is it really? Because if Devin Bush can't figure things out in the run game and Robert Spillane can't figure things out in the passing game, who's really to blame for that? Because it's not like this is something this is new with either guy.
Right.
Robert Spillane has been in liability and coverage since he got the opportunity last season. Devin Bush has been a liability in the run game probably since he came back from that ACL injury. At this point, it's like, is this just the fact that they can't catch on, or is this really what they are? Are they what they are at this point? This is why we have the preseason to try to sort this out. And neither guy really proved anybody otherwise this first time out.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's frustrating because, you know, one of them has to win the job.
Right.
And neither of them look like they are capable of taking the job, at least after this first week. I mean, they even interviewed Devin Bush and said, you know, like, what happens if it doesn't work out this season? He's like, you know, it's a business. It'll work out somewhere else.
And that's an entirely realistic statement for him to make. I expect him to think that way. Because if you're a professional athlete, you got to think that you're playing for two different people. You're playing for the guy who signed your checks now, and you might be playing for the next guy that signed your check. You got to look at it that way. Because here's the thing. We love to talk about, oh, it's a business when teams cut players or when they trade them. But for players to think it's a business, all of a sudden that's a bad thing. No, 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 no. They're part of the business too. And if they don't look at it, I'm looking at them like they're crazy. They should look at it that way. Because their window to earn money in this business, their window to be productive in this business and to have success is smaller than anybody else's involved in the timetable. How many bad coaches have we seen coach for decades in this game, Greg? Yeah. How many owners who are terrible at what they do continue to own teams and just trot terrible squads out on the field every year? No one seems to really care about them. They don't get checked on it. They might get complaints about it from fans, but they're not going to be removed because they own the team. How many bad GMs have we seen bounce from organization to organization to organization and continue to do the same things wrong? But players talk about it's a business and try to look at their own career mortality and they're wrong about it? I vehemently disagree with that. You can separate the player from the reality. Has Devin Bush played up to his expectations? No, that's not a mystery. It's not a hidden truth. But what is an actual truth that cannot be disputed is Devin Bush knows that his window to do whatever he can in this league as a professional athlete is limited. And he has to look at it that way. And if you don't use that as motivation, if you don't see the fact that, hey, I could lose my job tomorrow and there's another guy waiting to take it from me, if you can't get comfortable with that fact, if you can't get comfortable with competition, if you can't get comfortable with the fact that, hey, there is a window and a mortality to what I do, then maybe competing for a living just ain't your thing. And if people on the outside can't grasp that, then maybe professional sports ain't your thing either.
You think the Bears are looking at him at all in a Roquan Smith trade?
I don't know how that benefits the Bears.
Right.
I've heard this whole, like, oh, the Steelers should trade for Roquan Smith. Well, let's go back to why he wants to be traded. Because the Bears won't sign him to a long-term contract. And a guy like Roquan Smith is going to command a good deal of money. Why don't the Steelers trade for him? Okay, here's the thing. A guy like Roquan Smith with that kind of value, it's not as high of a value as a Russell Wilson or as high of a value as Aaron Rodgers of other guys we heard that they needed to trade for in the offseason, but he's still going to come with the value. He's going to cost you at least one body. He's going to cost you at least one draft pick, probably day two at the latest, and you still got to re-sign the guy. He's not going to come in and start at zero. He's going to come in with the same contract situation that he had before he left Chicago, wanting an extension. Now you got to be able to pay him. Well, you just spent a bunch of money paying Minka Fitzpatrick this season, which you needed to do. You paid a bunch of money paying TJ Watt last season, which also you needed to do. Now, there's a lot of money that comes off the books after this season. And depending on what happens at the quarterback position, you could have even more money coming off the books next season. So if you're going to try to re-sign a Roquan Smith, you might have to make other decisions with that in mind, or you might have to move other pieces around with that in mind. This is why this is such a very dicey situation. And if you want to try to free up the opportunity to maybe move a draft pick, maybe drafting or maybe trading an excess position, like, say, quarterback, becomes all the more important in this situation if you want to try to give something up to get something of value. All that stuff comes into play in situations like these. You can't just look at it and say, oh, trade for this guy. Nothing happens in a vacuum in this league. Everything has some kind of cost to it.
Plus, you can't tamper, and he doesn't have an agent, so you can't just say,
right,
hey, how much do you want and how many years do you want? That's tampering, so you they can't
would,
do that.
And the Bears would have to give his agent permission to talk to other teams about a trade and an extension. That's the thing. He can't just talk to anybody willy-nilly. The Bears have to be like, hey, if it can get you a deal and get you traded out of here, okay, fine. Tell his agent, go negotiate with other teams. But that permission has to come from Chicago and no one else.
What are you looking for in game two of this of the preseason on Saturday?
Three things in particular. I want to see more out of Kenny Pickett. I think he's going to get more opportunities. This past week he was practicing with the second team. It sounds like he's going to get more snaps. I don't expect to see a lot of Mitchell Trubisky. He's the number one guy. He came in his first drive, led them down the field, and did what he needed to do. They're going to make sure he's standing on both feet by the time they go to Cincinnati on September 11th, so I don't expect him to play a lot in this game, although he'll probably play the first quarter in the third preseason game against the Lions, because that's probably going to be the dress rehearsal, because that's usually what the third game is, as far as the starters playing a quarter or maybe three or four extended drives, just to see how everything is meshing together. So I don't expect to see him. I expect to see more of Kenny Pickett. I expect to see more of Mason Rudolph. I expect to see the running back position maybe have a little bit more color to it, because I thought all the running backs who played in that game against Seattle played pretty well. I thought Anthony McFarlane acquitted himself well. I thought Jaylen Warren played exceptionally well. I thought Anthony McFarlane played exceptionally well. I think he had, 7 yards a carry. So I thought he played well. Both of those guys, I thought, did their jobs. Master Teague and the opportunities that he got before he got hurt this past week in practice, Master Teague did his job well. Mateo Durant, and I'll say this till the cows come home. Mateo Durant came up with a really big play in that fourth quarter, springing a big block to let Kenny Pickett get loose and scramble for some yardage. That was a huge block that let Kenny Pickett get some open field and move the chains.
Was that the play he got the first down on?
That was the play he got the first down on. And it was one of those just like, wait a minute, number 40. Oh, wait, Mateo Durant. Yeah, that was him. Because I had to think about it. I'm like, wait a minute, who's 40? Because we've seen so many running backs with this team in the course of training camp. Mateo Durant came up with a big block. I thought the running backs as a whole really acquitted themselves as doing those things that we hadn't seen from backup running backs in the past. With that said, Benny Snell's back at practice this week. He's in pads. I expect to see a good dose of him, too.
Was that all three things?
Was what, two? The third thing?
Yeah.
Will we see the starters on defense? Will we see the ones? I'd like to hope to. We haven't seen Cam Hayward yet. We really don't need to, technically. We haven't seen Tyson Alualu yet. I know they're going to try to work him back slowly and make sure he's ready to go. I think they're more concerned about him being healthy as opposed to him being ready to go. He's played this league long enough. He knows what he's doing. Larry Ogunjobi is a guy who has continued to impress the staff in practice. Will we see those guys in this game or the third game? That's the question. I want to see more from the linebackers particularly, because I thought they got whooped in coverage a little bit outside of Miles Jack. I thought they had their issues as far as the run game.
We didn't even talk about that. Miles Jack was awesome in game one.
Miles Jack was the Miles Jack I expected him to be.
Yep.
When they got him, I said they finally got the right linebacker from Jacksonville.
Right.
And that's nothing against Joe Schobert. Joe Schobert, at times last year, did a few things, but he was still lacking. Just imagine if Joe Schobert was still here. Between Schobert, Spillane, and Bush, now you'd have three linebackers that were all lacking what you need for a guy in a starter. Meanwhile, they got a guy in Miles Jack who's a starter. He's the one guy you're no longer questioning after game one. He did his job. But I need to see more out of the other guys. I need to see more out of Bush. I need to see more out of Spillane. I need to see more out of Mark Robinson. There's another guy I'm thinking about, Buddy Johnson. I want to see what he's capable of. We need to see these three or four guys get out there and see if someone can separate themselves as someone that's reliable in case the starter and whoever the other starter is goes down, because someone's got to be ready. We don't need a repeat of a couple years ago when six or seven different guys played inside linebacker. We don't need a repeat of that. We need bodies that are ready to go in here and actually, I should say, we need to see bodies that are ready to go in here and play. So that's going to be something that's important to me too.
I get it that the starters didn't play in the preseason opener and probably, you know, they might not here in game two on defense, but the one thing that I would like to see better than last game was, once again, they got burned by the run a good bit.
Yeah.
And it wasn't against, like, a top running back. It was against a rookie. Now, granted, Kenneth Walker III's not a bad guy to go up against. He's a beast.
Good running back.
And so is DJ Dallas. Is that his
DJ
name?
DJ Dallas, yeah.
DJ Dallas has been in the league? Fine.
Right.
But I got to see them stop the run a couple of times. It seemed like Seattle was just running all over them whenever they wanted to.
No, I partially attribute that to not seeing the ones on the field up front. We didn't see the five guys up front in their base package.
Right.
We didn't see TJ Watt, Alex Highsmith, Alualu, Cam, and Ogunjobi together. You put those five guys on the field, if those five guys get gashed, plus the two linebackers, now I'm worried. That group, I mean, because we're talking about the quarterbacks facing second and third team defenses. Well, the Seahawks running game saw second and third team defenses at best as far as the defensive line.
Right.
So that's something that I'm maybe checking. I'm not circling it, but I might put a check marker or an X next to it.
Another thing, I'm with you on quarterbacks. I would like to see more of Kenny Pickett with starters. I'd like to see him with George Pickens. That's the one thing I really want to see this week, is Kenny Pickett to George Pickens. I would also like to see I was really impressed with the wide receivers that they were bringing into the game late in that game.
Yeah, Steven Sims made plays.
Is it Sims?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was really good on punt return. I enjoyed his return of like 35 yards, he is fast.
Yeah.
The end around that they had, you texted me, this is Matt Canada-esque offense at its finest.
They're running the jet motion, and they did that with Kenny Pickett on the field at quarterback.
Right.
I loved what Matt Canada did the moment Kenny Pickett came out there, because we forget when Kenny Pickett was trying to decide if he wanted to go to Pitt, the offensive coordinator at the time was Matt Canada. And Kenny Pickett will tell you, hey, the system that we ran at Pitt went too different from Matt Canada's offense when he was at Pitt. Canada was there 1 year. Kenny Pickett came in. He went straight to what Kenny Pickett was comfortable with. This is what an offensive coordinator does when he has a system that fits the quarterbacks that he had. It happened with Trubisky, and it happened with Pickett. Because I don't know if Mason Rudolph necessarily fits the scheme. And I think there's another reason why, and this is something we'll talk about in the second segment, this situation can change. But he brought Kenny Pickett in. That first play, play action, roll out to his right, hits Jay Sternberger for a nice pickup. Next play, jet motion, Steven Sims, bang, huge play. That was the Matt Canada offense that I expect to see every time this team steps out on the field, whether it's with Mitch Trubisky at quarterback or with Kenny Pickett. They can really open this offense up and do all the stuff that they did back with Pitt in 2016. And I'm going to say this every opportunity I can. If you were looking at last year's offense, or you're looking at the 1 year he was at LSU and saying, oh man, Matt Canada's offense is not that good, or the year he was at Wisconsin, that's because they didn't let him do what works for him. And they didn't have the personnel to do what works for him. The most pure version of his offense is Pitt in 2016. That's what you want to look at. This past Saturday looked a lot like Pitt in 2016. Which is something I want to see more of, by the way.
Yep.
If we're on that subject.
Final point on preseason game number two. I'd take the over because there's a lot of quarterbacks that are trying to strike up a pose here at QB number one. They are all balling out.
I don't know if the competition at the quarterback from the top spot is as much of a motivation as everybody else might expect it to be. I think Mike Tomlin has his mind set on barring any kind of disaster and him just totally like slipping and falling and busting his head open. I think Mitch Trubisky's the guy.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
I think it's more or less about Mitch Trubisky proving that he is the guy and Kenny Pickett proving, hey, you know, I'm ready to take the next thing you can give to me. Because it was really a matter of Kenny Pickett just doing what was in front of him. And I heard this, well, he didn't throw down the field a lot. Okay, well, they didn't have opportunities for him to throw down the field a lot. But the little bit that they gave him, you could tell they were trying to ease him into it. And the little bit that they gave him, he excelled with. 13 of 15, threw two touchdown passes, converted a two-point conversion, and ran a little bit and got himself some yardage and moved the chains. The small things that they gave him, he took them. Now, can they add a little bit more onto the load for the expectations for him in game two? And can he meet those? That's what I want to see. He doesn't need to do everything. You don't have to whip out the entire arsenal the first time out. He did what they told him to do the first time around. He handled his job well. He even had the game in his hands and converted there. All right, let's up the challenge a little bit and see if he can do more the second time around.
You want to see him throw the ball deeper? Give him a guy like George Pickens.
He'll throw
the ball deeper if he's got Pickens. And he doesn't need to throw the ball deeper with what he had last week.
And give him an offensive line that will give him time for his receivers to get downfield and throw the ball deep.
Right.
There has to be a necessity and the personnel to do it. And that's something that we didn't see last year.
Mm-hmm.
So why would we expect that to change this time around when he's in the same kind of situation if we didn't see it last year? They got to protect their investment. That's why we saw two series from Mitch Trubisky. They got to protect their investment with Kenny Pickett as well, as far as who's in front of him to make sure he can do his job.
Steelers-Jaguars, Saturday at 7 o'clock, KDKA television.
KDKA TV, yours truly. I will be there after, not necessarily after the game, but I will be there after the Extra Point post-game show doing a special edition of the Ireland Contracting Nightly Sports Call. It's me and Paul Zeiss doing that one, and then I'll have the highlights during KDKA News at 11. So, yeah, preseason, this is prime time for us. We don't have time to get the midseason form. We got to be ready to go when we step out there.
It was weird last week. Like, it didn't have a preseason feel to it.
No.
Because it was such a good game.
It was a good game. It was a game with a packed crowd. It was a game that had expectations. It was a game that the offense in the first drive of the game, I think, caught a lot of people off guard in a good way and got them energized. And then Kenny Pickett came out, because you saw the play Mason Rudolph made, even though he came out to booze, which I thought was
classless.
Just it's lowbrow. It's just, I have a theory behind that as to why Mason Rudolph is treated the way he is. I'm not going to get into that now because it's just not the forum for it. But the fact that he did his job and got the result that he got, I think people were pleased with it. Then Kenny Pickett showed up. That's when people really got into it because they wanted to see him play. The crowd was behind him, and he didn't disappoint. That's the big thing. We could sit here and say, oh, they're overhyping Kenny Pickett. If nothing else, the one thing that no one can argue or try to dispel, it's indisputable. Kenny Pickett came in the game, did his job, and helped this team win. I don't know why people are so hung up on how quarterbacks have to do their jobs. Last time I checked, you were more concerned about quarterbacks winning games, right?
Yeah.
Last time I checked, we didn't care about style points. It's about, well, this team has to win games and win in the playoffs. Okay. Now you're worried about how it's done? Make up your mind. You either want them to win or you want them to win a certain way. How about we focus on the small stuff? That's what Kenny Pickett did. He's focused on the small stuff. He did his job. Let's just keep it that way. In the meantime, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it's time to play once again our favorite news headline game, Is This a Thing? We'll do that when we come back. Episode number 43 of the Sunday Morning Grind podcast, even though this is not being released on a Sunday. Josh Taylor, Greg Finley, see you in a minute. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Grind podcast, a show where we talk about sports both on the Pittsburgh level locally, but also around the sporting world as well. We have a little fun with it, by the way, too. You can download the Sunday Morning Grind on iTunes, Google Podcast, Anchor, or Spotify, basically anywhere you get your podcasts from. Now let's get back to the show.
This is not becoming a thing. No, this is not a thing.
I'm pretty sure it's a thing.
It's not a thing.
It's not a thing.
We'll go with it.
Make it a thing.
Oh, it's a thing now.
Yeah. Let's go for it.
Love that.
Perfect.
Everyone loves a little more flavor. Nobody wants vanilla.
What are the big three?
What big three?
The big three.
What big three?
Androids, aliens, and wizards.
That's not a thing.
That's definitely a thing.
No, it's not.
Every time we fight one of the three.
So who are you fighting now, Gandalf?
How do you know about Gandalf?
I read The Hobbit in 1937 when it first came out.
So you see my point?
No, I don't.
And pose the question, how is this not a thing? Because while there are many things in this world that should no longer be things, there are also many non-things that should absolutely be thingified, brought into the thing-sistence, if you will. You know, like an all-dog version of the Blue Man Group. Or, exactly. What? How is that not a thing?
You hear the music. You heard the drop. We are about to venture into the Thingiverse, if you will. It's time to play our favorite news headline game, Is This a Thing? Where Greg and I, basically, we glean certain, whether they're headlines, because sometimes they are headlines and sometimes they're just things that are said. Sometimes there are things that are implied. But we collect a whole bunch of topics, if you will, and we decide, is this something that's actually worth our time? Is it worth paying attention to? Should we take this seriously? Or is this indeed fake news?
Before we start, how great was that opening? Like, we've added to it, and I think that that's the best one yet.
The MCU touch is just chef's kiss. That's such a chef's kiss touch. It made me want to go back and watch Captain America and the Winter Soldier again. Excuse me, Falcon and Winter Soldier again. Don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen the series yet. But, yeah, I thought that was a really good touch.
I just need Kong the Conqueror saying it's a thing or it's not a thing, and I think we're set.
Why? I know this isn't related to the topic, but why am I so energized to see the infusion of Kang the Conqueror and the possible return of He Who Remains?
You love him.
I love He Who Remains.
You do. You just do.
I love the character. B, I love Jonathan Majors because he's a fantastic actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to play every variant. Every variant of Kang the Conqueror? Are you kidding me? I cannot wait.
It's going to be insane. Like, you're just going to keep seeing him. And you think you're going to get tired of him, but you're not.
He's going to steal the show the way Helmut Zemo did in Falcon and Winter Soldier with him dancing in that club. He's going to just steal the show every time. I cannot wait. But that's not what we're here for. We're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about other stuff. We got a list of about a dozen or so things that we are going to debate whether or not they are indeed thingified. So let's get into it. Number one, and this is a great, great topic to kick this off, because even though the NFL preseason is upon us, that means college football season is right around the corner. And you know I get excited about the NFL, Greg, but nothing gets my blood pumping like college football.
Dude, one more week.
Oh, my God.
One more week from Saturday.
I'm so excited. Like, the NFL is the NFL, and it's king. It rules the roost. I get it.
Yep.
But for pure entertainment value, college football has literally everything and way, way more. So excited about it.
We got Pitt, West Virginia in, what, 2 weeks from?
September 1st.
Yeah, two weeks from this podcast being released.
Backyard Brawl. I'm anchoring that night, so I get to read highlights of the Backyard Brawl. First time these teams have played in 11 seasons. I am so pumped for that. So this is going to be good. I've covered both teams before, so this is going to be fun for me.
We'll have a podcast that Wednesday night beforehand and release Thursday.
Oh, yes, we will. I know we're going against the Sunday morning grind landscape by releasing on Thursday or Friday, but hey.
We can talk about college football now.
College football. We have to go against probably the whole point in format. Here's the fun part. And think of it this way. We're going to talk about a lot of college football, and it's going to be released on Thursday or Friday, but now you can hear us talk about college football. We can make our picks, and if you actually listen on Sunday morning, you can roast us if our picks are bad. It's perfect. We get in the hot sheet. You can absolutely destroy us for the college football side of hot sheet.
And if you want to hear Josh rip Texas not once but twice, listen to him on The Fan on Sunday morning as well.
I will rip Texas every opportunity I have, and it's not just because.
They play Alabama this year. I'm looking forward to that final score.
And it's not just because I'm an Arkansas supporter, because I am. I used to cover the team for about two seasons. I didn't get to cover the third because I left, but close to 3 years. You know I have an affinity for my Razorbacks.
Yes.
You know who Razorback fans hate?
Texas.
Yep. So there's that.
All right.
Speaking of, since we mentioned Texas, let's get to our first topic. Barstool U, I believe this is an Instagram account, released their list of the top 10 most annoying college fan bases. Here's the list. We'll go from 10 to 1.
Okay.
Number 10 is Clemson. Although I'd argue their coach is more annoying than their fan base.
Yeah, I was just going to say, their fan base ain't bad. It's Dabo.
Clemson fans don't bother me.
It's Dabo.
I need Dabo to shut up every once in a while. Like, I need him to stop acting like he's the prophet of college football. Just stop. But Clemson number 10, this one's super low for reasons that we just discussed. Texas at number 9. But I'd also make the case, it's not their fan base as much as it is maybe, I don't know, their boosters annoy the hell out of me. There's that. Number 8, Penn State.
Go a little higher, please.
Might not be that inaccurate. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, I need it higher than 8.
I would argue higher than 8. Number 7, Texas A&M.
I don't think their fans are that bad.
They haven't been as bad recently, but like almost 10 years ago. Actually, it would be 10 years ago. The peak Johnny Manziel era?
Yeah, okay.
A&M fans were insufferable. Although there was one A&M fan I didn't mind too much. I'll tell you that story off air.
Uh-oh.
Number 6, USC. This one, probably justified. Number 5.
Yeah, but they haven't been good in so long.
But that's part of why it's annoying, because they're still acting like they are good.
Fair.
There's a couple that were left off I'll get to later. Number 5, Tennessee. Recent years?
Yeah.
Remember how they pretty much got a brand new hired coach fired because they didn't like him?
Yeah.
Remember that happened? That's warranted.
Didn't they start throwing stuff on the field that delayed a football game for like a while?
That sounds about right.
That was at Tennessee.
That sounds about right. That sounds like Knoxville.
Yes.
Number 4, Notre Dame.
Higher, please.
But the fact that they're in the top 5, I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too.
Number 3, Alabama. I will agree with this and disagree with this. I will agree with this in the fact that Alabama fans, yeah, they got a little bit extra talk in them.
But they're really good, so they're allowed to.
It ain't bragging if you can back it up. That's
exactly.
All I'm saying. Number 2 is Auburn. I was shocked by this. Auburn fans can be a pain.
But they're not very good, so you don't hear much about them.
You don't hear much about them, but their fans can be annoying. So, yeah, I get it.
Who poisoned the tree, Auburn fan or Alabama fan?
That was, I'd say Toomer's Corner is in. Let's say it's in Tuscaloosa, so I think an Auburn fan poisoned a tree at Toomer's Corner.
Okay.
Please verify that for me if you can. I want to say that was the case, because I'm trying to remember the documentary about it. I want to say
Alabama man poisoned Auburn tree.
Oh, so it was an Alabama fan that poisoned the Auburn tree.
Yep.
Well, there you go. I was a 50-50 shot.
Yeah.
But Auburn number two.
Number one?
I talked about this. I usually do a disclaimer every year before college football season to talk about teams with their fan bases, especially the local fan bases, and then I might stretch out because of the teams that are nearby. There was a year, I want to say it was a couple years ago, where I specifically told this fan base, hey, there's a reason why everyone hates you, and they're number one on this list. Ohio State. Ohio State fans, I'm going to tell you this again. There's a reason why everyone hates you. They're number one for a reason, and I actually agree with this one.
I think Penn State should be higher, and I think that I think Auburn should be lower.
Well, let me start out by making this case, because this is a thing. Yeah, so let's ask the question.
Right.
This list of top 10 most annoying college fan bases being 100% valid, is this a thing?
Not 100% valid in ways of the ranking system, but I think they nailed most of these teams in this list.
I think they got most of it right, too. I think there's a glaring omission, though. If there's one I would remove Clemson.
Yep.
And the team I would replace them with would immediately be inserted into the top five.
Let me guess.
Go for it.
Wait, I had one. Oh, Michigan.
Oh, there you go. There you
yes. go. Because that's who I was going to say, too. I said, where's the Michigan fan base at?
Now, I'll give Michigan their flowers. They made it to the college football playoff.
And they got steamrolled.
They made it there. And that's pretty much where the sentence begins and ends. It just took them a long damn while to get there. Michigan ain't won a national championship in damn near three decades. Ain't done much of anything of any importance in damn near three decades, and nor has their coach. But Michigan fans, they love to treat their program like a potty training toddler. They do one thing, and everybody's supposed to be excited about it. Like they made a boom in the potty. Look, Michigan went potty. They should be in the top five, maybe even two or three with a bullet. And to answer the question, it's not a thing. This isn't inaccurate. I will replace Clemson with Michigan and put them in the top five immediately on general principle alone. And I'd put Texas in the top five, too.
I mean, they're probably honking their horns that they actually beat Ohio State for once, but...
How long did it take?
Exactly.
Remind me. And Jim Harbaugh had never beaten Ohio State. Why did they fire Lloyd Carr again?
Because he couldn't beat Ohio State.
Because he couldn't beat Ohio State. The last guy that led them to a national championship. And they fired him because he couldn't beat Ohio State. But they wanted to exalt Jim Harbaugh as if he's some khaki-wearing Jesus. But couldn't beat Ohio State, then he finally does it. Oh, okay, see, now it justifies us wanting to keep him. No, it doesn't. It lets you off the hook. Sorry. If there's a team...
This is going to be a fun college football season on the show.
If there's a team I love to rip after Texas, it's probably Michigan. So, that's all I'm saying.
I love to rip Penn State, so...
Well, here's the problem.
And I get blocked for it, too.
Here's the problem. I don't find Penn State fans annoying as much as I just find them freaking thin-skinned.
Right.
I'm putting you in the same class as Michigan. Now, here's the one thing I will say in the defense of Penn State fans. Because Pitt fans love to rag on Penn State. Well, what has James Franklin really done? The things your coach is finally doing 5 years later. Like winning their conference and getting to a New Year's Six bowl game. Which, by the way, Penn State's done, what, three, four times under James Franklin? Pitt finally got there once under Pat Narduzzi. Now you want to stick your chest out. No. You got more work to do before you can actually say something. Because Penn State was doing this damn near a decade ago.
Yep.
When you called James Franklin underrated then, and he was winning this division and won a Big Ten championship and went to a New Year's bowl game. They got smoked by Juju and USC, but at least he got there. Got there before you did, Pitt fans. And by the way, I'm not letting Pitt fans off the hook. You're dangerously close to finding yourself on this list if you don't watch yourselves. You are pretty damn close. Because that whole we like to overhype ourselves for no reason and then we get brought back down to earth and now woe is us for everything. Oh, you need to let us off the hook because we're Pitt. No, we're not letting you off the hook because you couldn't remind yourselves that you were Pitt before you were overhyping yourselves. Then you got humbled and like, well, we are Pitt. No. Either keep the big boy pants on or don't wear them at all. If they don't fit, then don't wear them. If you can't run with the big dog, stay off the porch. I'll leave it at that.
We got to move on.
We got to move on. This is a good one. The Detroit Lions are on Hard Knocks, right? There was a clip from the show. I want to say, I can't remember the running back's name. We'll have to follow it up later on if you get a chance.
Was it DeAndre Swift?
It might have been DeAndre Swift. He was talking about getting this team motivated because of pretty much the expectations around them and them pretty much wanting to get off the schneid as being the Chicago Cubs-esque lovable losers of the NFL. And he was trying to motivate his teammates about how important it is to change this culture and basically said, you know, I'm about to cry. And that video clip with the subtitle was posted online. And of course, someone froze that part of it. And they just took that thing, that screenshot, are like, yeah, I'm hanging on to this one during the season.
It's Jamal somebody.
Okay, so my question. The Lions pretty much handing out a free meme for everyone to make fun of them during the course of the season.
Jamal Williams from the Packers. That's who it is.
Of Jamal Williams.
But he's with the Lions now.
The Lions handing everybody a free meme of Jamal Williams saying, I'm about to cry. Is this a thing?
You know for a fact Lions fans will be using that all season long.
And so will Lions detractors, which means everybody else is not a Lions fan.
I mean, I'm going to use that whenever DeGrom gets hurt.
I may use that at the end of college basketball season when Duquesne probably doesn't make the NCAA tournament again. So that might happen too.
Now that I'm betting again, when I lose by one leg on a parlay, I'm just going to send you that.
We agree this is a thing?
It's absolutely a thing.
Not only is it a thing, it's going to be celebrated as a great thing.
We're going to use it so much in our text messaging.
Oh, my God. It's going to turn into a great, like, just cavalcade of circumstances to use that meme.
It's going to be, it'll be the new Ben O gif.
The Ben O gif, is that may be my favorite. That one and He Who Remains kind of like doing the head in his hand, as if to say, didn't I tell you?
You're welcome.
Yeah. Just saying, it's up there. It might end up in the top three. Let's move on to basketball here. Kevin Durant. If there's a name I'm sick of hearing,
it's Kevin Durant.
In the basketball offseason, akin to Texas and Michigan football,
it's Kevin Durant.
It's probably Kevin Durant.
And I don't blame you.
There are reports that Kevin Durant said he'd rather retire than play for Brooklyn. Durant is denying this. He says it's BS.
Is it, though?
That's my question. Kevin Durant denying that he would retire and play for Brooklyn. Is that a thing?
I'm wondering.
Is he telling the truth?
I'm wondering where this came from. I know it came from Bleacher Report, but I wonder what the source was. If it wasn't Brian Windhorst, I'm not buying into it. If it's not him pointing up in the sky saying, now why is Kevin Durant looking to retire?
No, why is that? That might be an overused meme too over the next year. Windhorst is a meme I'm going to use a ton.
That's another one.
Since we're talking about memes that could be used.
No, I think that Kevin Durant probably said something in behind closed doors about, I don't want to play for Brooklyn anymore. And, you know, probably in the heat of the moment said, I'd rather retire than play for Brooklyn. And somebody overheard it and somebody ran with it as a story. I don't think it's a thing.
I think it's a thing, but not from him. Because what preceded all of this? Kevin Durant's been trying to get traded for a while, right?
Right.
I think someone from his camp is putting this out there, whether it be his agent or someone else. I don't think it's necessarily what he's saying, but I think his camp is putting it out there to give him a little bit of leverage.
To get him traded?
To get him traded. Because he's been trying so hard to get himself traded to the point where he's even tried to reach out to Golden State and get himself traded there and go back to Golden State after he left Golden State to go to Brooklyn. Like, what? What? What?
Apparently.
So your ex leveled up and you want to try to get back together again?
Apparently he just bought Tom Brady's house too in Boston. So apparently Brady's house in New England or wherever in Boston, Durant just bought it.
This is desperation.
He's going to end up playing for the Nets because they're not going to get a good enough return that they want because teams aren't going to go crazy for Kevin Durant because of how bad his attitude is.
It may not be coming from him, but it's coming from somebody near him because they're trying to create leverage in a situation where he has none. And let's not kid ourselves. If that man retires now as maligned as he is as an individual player, which, by the way, one of the things I hate the most when it comes to discussions about NBA is about who's, where's this guy ranked? Who's top five? Who's the best of all time? Shut up and watch the game, please. But with this man and how he is either maligned or just over-deified as far as whether or not he's one of the top five players ever or where is his legacy lead, if he quits now, he'll never hear the end of it. And he knows he can't afford that.
Right.
So I think it's a thing, but it's not from him. It's from somebody around him.
Okay.
Speaking of players and trades, players that are actually living up to their hype, as opposed to Kevin Durant, and possibly, and this isn't even trade as much as it is free agency moving to a different team. There have been more than one report about the possibility of Odell Beckham Jr., who got hurt in the Super Bowl, finally won his first ring with the Los Angeles Rams. But his former teammate, Von Miller, who's now Buffalo Bill and signed a pretty long contract and getting paid pretty well to probably not finish that contract, is reportedly recruiting Odell Beckham Jr. to Buffalo. Greg, OBJ to the Bills, is this a thing?
Can they make that work with him and Stephon Diggs?
I think they can.
Yeah?
I think they totally can.
Okay.
Question is, does Buffalo have the cap space to pay both guys? That's what it's going to come down to. Diggs just got a new contract not too long ago, didn't he? So, I would think it's possible, and it would make a lot of sense for Buffalo, especially. Now, granted, I don't know how healthy he's going to be when the season starts. It's not going to be on a full year because he literally tore his ACL during the Super Bowl. So, right. He's not going to play a full season.
Right.
So, you can give him a prorated deal for a year and then maybe add a second year onto it. That probably pays him a little bit more commensurate with his ability. And make it work in Buffalo. So I think it's possible.
They have him, Diggs, and Gabriel Davis. Whew.
If you're Buffalo, why wouldn't you give that to Josh Allen? Why wouldn't you give Josh Allen, especially considering the fact that the defense, they're good. Jordan Poyer's probably about to get paid too because Derwin James just got paid.
Yeah.
After Minkah Fitzpatrick just got paid. So Jordan right. Poyer, the safety, is probably going to get paid. The defense is going to be fine. Why wouldn't you give Josh Allen everything he needs if your defense is already taken care of? Makes sense to me.
Yeah, makes.
This sounds like a thing to me.
It makes them even scarier, though, than they already are.
Oh, yeah. And everybody should be scared. This sounds like a thing to me.
Yeah, I think so.
It's feasible. It's possible. And every circumstance point to it being possible.
Why wouldn't he want to play with them, too?
Exactly. Exactly. And if I'm Von Miller, hey, come on with me. Let's do this. Let's run it back. Run it back and do it again.
Well, we're going to do it in Buffalo instead of Los Angeles.
And what better place would it be to go to that place and win a Super Bowl than Buffalo, a city that's been starving for one for a while, that went to four straight and could not win one and had a Hall of Famer at quarterback, a Hall of Famer wide receiver, and a Hall of Fame coach. Matter of fact, they had a handful of Hall of Famers on that team in Buffalo, and with good reason. So that'd be a great place to do it is in Buffalo.
Plus, that division is just screaming Buffalo Bills.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's already a wrap, pretty much.
They're going to own it for the next decade the way the Patriots owned it for the previous two.
So why not go there?
Exactly. Let's stick with NFL and rumors. Roquan Smith wants out of Chicago. Can't come to a contract extension. Of course, in true Pittsburgh fashion, Pittsburgh fans, because, you know, we love to be around people who have main character syndrome. He's got to come to the Steelers, right? They got to try to trade for him. Roquan Smith being possibly traded to the Steelers, Greg, is this a thing?
The more and more I think about it, the more and more I think it's not going to happen. So I'm going to say no.
I'm not going to say no because it doesn't make sense. I'm going to say no because I don't know if it's possible. Now,
yes, it's like what we talked about in the first segment.
Now, bear in mind, Steelers have made some moves here, and they've re-signed some guys, and they got extensions for Deontay Johnson, and they signed Minkah Fitzpatrick, and they signed Chris Boswell. According to OverTheCap.com, the Steelers have about $9.9 million in cap space. Now, according to this year's cap system, Roquan Smith is set to make $9.7 million this season. And wherever he goes, that money goes with him. So he's on the hook for $9.7 million wherever he goes. So that puts the Steelers literally right up against the cap. Now, there's a caveat to this. There's a couple guys they could restructure to make this work. They could restructure T.J. Watt, because he's like, what, a $20 million cap hit this season? So they could restructure him. Or, excuse me, a $31.1 million cap hit. They can restructure T.J. Watt to make it work if they wanted to. They can restructure Cam Hayward. He's a $17.4 million cap hit. They can finagle some things and get themselves under the cap. But here's the bigger problem. Going into next season, the Steelers have about $17.3 million in cap space. You're going to have to sign Roquan Smith to an extension. That's the reason why he wants out of Chicago, because they haven't done it yet. I'm wondering if that's possible. Now, Devin Bush comes off the books next year. Miles Jack is an $11.2 million cap hit next season. Can you afford to pay that much money to the guys that are going to be your two, potentially your two inside linebackers? Are you willing to do that and bring another guy in off the street that's trying to fix this revolving problem at linebacker? I don't know if Omar Khan's willing to take that risk right now. I'm going to say for the time being, it's not a thing. But if you start hearing reports of, hey, the Steelers are trying to restructure Cam Hayward's contract, or hey, the Steelers are trying to restructure TJ Watt's contract, then start listening for Roquan
Smith
rumors.
Brian Windhorst meme.
Yes. If that happens, I'm going to be Brian Windhorst. Like, now what? Now why is that? Somebody needs to pay attention to what's going on in Pittsburgh.
You're just
going to
quote Rappaport's tweet about a restructured contract with Windhorst pointing.
Oh, it will be. It totally will be. You're going to set your watch to it. That's, and if it doesn't happen within an hour, you're probably going to be like, hey, are you busy? Where's your Windhorst tweet? But yeah, I think it could be a thing.
Okay.
Moving this along. Another trade possibility. There's been rumors linking Mason Rudolph to the Lions. This is why I didn't want to comment on this as much during the first segment. Mason Rudolph traded to the Lions, or potentially traded to the Lions. Is this a thing?
I still think the Jets, for some reason, probably because Zach Wilson got hurt.
Fair.
That's, as soon as I saw him go down when I watched very limited preseason that night, and I saw him get hurt, I thought immediately, Mason Rudolph, Jets, maybe? Question mark?
Like, he may fit their system better.
They're going to roll Joe Flacco out there?
Joe Flacco in his prime had question marks.
Right.
Now you got the ghost of Joe Flacco? Good luck.
How many ghosts of quarterbacks are there in this league?
There's a few left still haunting. You know, they're still the old groundskeeper in the Scooby-Doo episode. And Joe Flacco's one of them.
Tom Brady's still Tom Brady. He's not the ghost of Tom Brady.
He's not the ghost of Tom Brady yet. The ghost of Aaron Rodgers has not arrived. But the ghost of Joe Flacco is in the New York, New Jersey area, and he is alive and well.
So I'm going to say it's not a thing because I think it's the Jets.
I'm going to say it's not a thing because there are other teams that need quarterbacks more.
Yep.
So for now, this isn't a thing.
Okay.
On the topic of Steelers quarterbacks, we had a long list here. We're probably going to trim this down a bit. Steelers fans and Mitchell Trubisky, there's a lot of sentiment. There are some people who really are sold on Mitchell Trubisky, and you and I had this discussion, and I told you if there's a free agent at quarterback that I would sign, it was Mitchell Trubisky. So when it happened, I was not too much shocked. But here's a question. We heard the cheers coming in for Kenny Pickett when he came in the game in the third quarter against Seattle. Mm-hmm. And then you saw what he did. And now there are already people saying, we got to see Kenny Pickett with the twos and the ones now. He's going to get a shot with the twos. I'm expecting as much. But there are so many people who want Kenny Pickett to be the guy immediately. And I'm wondering if they're doing it at the expense of Mitchell Trubisky. So my question to you, Steelers fans, first of all, wanting Mason Rudolph gone and hoping that Mitch Trubisky sucks so Kenny Pickett can get his shot. Is this a thing?
Yep, and yep. It's both of them, yeah. They booed Mason Rudolph when he came onto the field.
Before he threw that touchdown pass to George Pickens, and then they cheered it. Go figure.
It's very clear that they don't like him, and I don't get why, but I don't want to talk about it.
I got a theory as to why, but we'll save that for another show.
Yeah.
We'll save that for after he gets traded.
Okay.
We'll discuss. We'll unpack the entire phenomenon that is Pittsburgh fans and their hatred of Mason Rudolph.
And the love for Kenny Pickett, I get it. I like Kenny Pickett.
It's justified.
But you don't have to hate on Mitchell Trubisky for the reasons that they do. I mean, I've heard too many times on the radio during training camp, if Mitchell Trubisky had a bad camp day, it was, well, you know, Tomlin already called him the guy. Why is he the guy already? Went 0-for-4 today.
Meanwhile, Kenny Pickett had his issues too. Oh, well, you can't talk about it so soon. It's only been a few days.
Right.
So it's okay with Mitch Trubisky, but right. It's not okay with Kenny Pickett.
Exactly.
Make your messaging match, folks. Your messaging doesn't match.
Exactly.
Let's work on that.
Exactly. So
it's a thing.
Yeah, both of them are a thing.
Definitely a thing. All right, let's kind of go through this here, and we'll swing around to baseball here. The Atlanta Braves just had a big re-signing, Greg. They just locked up another young part of this core.
For a lot of money, and, well, not a lot of money per year, but it's an 8-year contract.
It's huge. As I try to find the specifics here,
8 years, $72 million for Michael Harris the second.
So now, you're keeping track. Michael Harris the second locked down.
Ronald Acuna's locked down.
Ronald Acuna's locked down. Matt Olson's locked down. Who am I missing? There's one
Austin
other.
Riley.
Austin Riley's locked down. Ozzie Albies ain't that expensive. Didn't he get an extension too?
I'm pretty sure he did.
Albies got one. You imagine at some point, Mike Soroka's probably going to be next on the list.
Swanson probably.
Dansby Swanson's probably going to be on there.
Whole team back.
They're going to bring the band back. They're the reigning world champions, and they've already found a way to upgrade into position. Now, granted, the Freddie Freeman discussion, we'll leave it where it is. But the Atlanta Braves continuing to personify my theory of kids and pitching for years to come. Greg, is this a thing?
If they get Soroka back healthy, oh my, kids and pitching to the max.
And you know the Braves got arms.
Yeah.
They've always had arms. They've had arms for 30 years. They got more.
They got the ghost of Charlie Morton out there.
They got the ghost of Charlie Morton out there. How many times have I said in the last couple of years I got a weird feeling about Atlanta?
Yeah.
It's a thing. They're doing, and bear in mind, they did this 25, 30 years ago. They did this for a decade and a half. Kids in pitching was their ethos.
Smoltz, Glavin, and Greg Maddux.
That was the pitching.
Chipper and Andrew Jones.
Those were the kids. David Justice was one of the kids at some point.
Yep.
Technically speaking, I think Tom Glavin, was it Glavin or Smoltz? Glavin was one of the ones that was actually one of their kids. I want to say he was an Atlanta guy. But Maddux, of course, was a free agent. Smoltz, they traded for from Detroit. So, I mean, they had this ethos of, hey, let's bring in talent, develop them. We'll scrape the cream off the top. The excess we trade to get back things that we need. And usually they kept the best of their pitching, and the pitchers that didn't suit the actual description, i.e. Charlie Morton early in his career, because he was drafted as a Brave. He eventually got traded to the Pirates, and now he's a Brave again. But he was part of that whole situation. That's how they got guys like Tim Hudson from Oakland when he left the A's to come to Atlanta and got paid. They've been doing this for decades. This is a thing.
And here's the thing, too. They have a winning mentality in this clubhouse where if you're a guy like Ronald Acuna Jr., mm-hmm. if you test out the free agency, you could probably make a lot more money. You would make a lot more money. But they have a winning mentality in Atlanta right now, and they're bringing all these guys back. Why wouldn't you want to play for them?
Side note. There will come a time, whether it's 5 years down the road or 10 or 50, where Ronald Acuna will look back to when he signed that contract and look at the money that Juan Soto was about to get and say, man, I should have waited.
Yeah. I texted you about his contract and was like, can you believe he actually signed this? It's not a lot of money.
There's going to be a time when he looks at the money Juan Soto gets or the money Shohei Ohtani gets, and he's going to say, man, I should have waited. Or the money Aaron Judge is about to get.
However, he's still going to be happy when he wins a couple of World Series because
he
the
will.
Braves are really good.
He will. Braves are really good. He's really good. And if he stays healthy, he could be one of the all-time great Braves of that franchise's history.
Yep.
Of maybe even MLB history. He's that good. I'm that sold on him. Here's a good context, or good converse in context. The Rangers, in the matter of a couple of days, have fired their manager and now fired John Daniels, their GM. The Texas Rangers pulling a Seth Rollins and burning it down. Is this a thing?
When you texted me that, I just started laughing because you would use a wrestling analogy.
Oh, they have
Texas
gone.
Texas Rangers.
They are going full Seth Rollins and burning this thing down. Are they not? Is this a thing?
I mean, the Rangers haven't been good in a long time. They brought in Corey Seager. All right, cool.
Those Seager boys can ball, though.
They're still not good, though.
Yeah, Seagers can ball. They're not.
You need a lot more than just that.
They're not Angels bad because they don't have two like generational talents that are wasting away in the primes of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
But they're bad.
Yeah.
At least they had the sense to burn it down, unlike the Angels. So it's a thing, and it should be a thing.
Can they actually come back from this, though?
Depends on how they decide to retool. Can the Rangers follow my well-known theory that's been continuously proven and now being currently proven in Atlanta of kids in pitching?
Well, they're going to try it with Jack Leiter in a couple of years when he's ready.
And they also managed to get the other guy from Vanderbilt that everybody wanted to hype up last year as the guy the Pirates should
get. Right. They did
get him.
They
got Kamar Rocker as well.
So they are trying to get some kids in pitching.
They're in the position to actually exercise the theory of kids in pitching. I will leave it at that. Last one, baseball related, we'll throw in here. Yankees are in trouble. They are in trouble. Guys are getting hurt. They're losing pitchers left and right. They're losing games left and right.
They are 8-16 since the All-Star break.
Oh, boy. And that's despite the fact that Aaron Judge is pretty much hitting everything that's not nailed down out of a ballpark, and it's still not working. Pressing the panic button on the Yankees, is this a thing?
Yeah, I think it is.
It feels like
they are falling off a cliff. Their starting pitching hasn't been good lately. Garrett Cole is shoving still, but they're not getting him any run support.
Not getting them runs. And that's with Judge doing what he's doing. And they brought in Andrew Benintendi. Woo pig.
Yep.
It feels like a thing to me.
It does. We need to transition, though, to one more. I want to do a bonus one.
Okay, let's do it.
Keith Hernandez.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Loves to hate on the Phillies. The Phillies and Mets played last weekend. They're doing the read, and you go, all right, looking up ahead, Mets taking on the Phillies for three, and Keith goes, can we just not do that game? Like, the Phillies are just terrible.
And
I turned the game on over the weekend, and Keith wasn't doing the game. He actually didn't do it.
He was like, yeah, I'm taking this day off.
So the Phillies get word about this, obviously, and Comcast Sportsnet Philadelphia has come up with a Keith Hernandez approval graphic.
I love it.
When the defensive play is really good, they fire it up in the corner and says, Keith Hernandez approved.
I love
this. How great is that?
I love this. The question of the Phillies trolling Keith Hernandez, is this a thing?
It's a thing.
It's a thing. And they should continue to do it. Continue to do it as long as you possibly can. Piss that old man off so bad. That'd be great. Could you imagine, and I know you don't want to imagine this happening, but you imagine the Phillies knocking off the Mets at the end of the season and ruining their postseason hopes, and Keith Hernandez is completely coming unglued? It would be poetic justice. I know you don't want to hear this scenario, but from the Phillies' perspective, it would be poetic justice. You're blinking really hard at me right now. I'm sorry that your team has to be used for this example. But if that were the case and the Phillies just got super petty, they'd be well within their right. Sorry, they would be. They'd be well within their right, and it'd be Keith Hernandez's fault.
Now we have to do one more because you've opened the can of worms. How do you feel about LeBron signing an extension for 2 years with the Lakers?
What was my response to you when you told me about it? What was my response? What did I send you?
I don't remember now.
It was a GIF of a particular athlete who's usually not impressed with many things.
Oh yeah. What's her name?
It was the Michaela Maroney.
Yeah, Michaela Maroney.
Or Michaela Maroney GIF of her not being impressed. Was it 2 years, $97 million?
$97 million.
Not impressed. Because here's my thing. What are you putting around him?
Nothing. It's the same crew again.
How many times do we have to see the same LeBron method? Bring him in. Bring in the guys he wants. Win a championship.
AD will hurt his knee about a month into the season, and he'll be done for the rest of the year.
We literally saw this in Cleveland, and now we're seeing it in L.A. Bring in the guys he wants. Ship off pieces he doesn't want. Ship off youth for pieces that are too old and guys that he wants. Win a championship, and in the whole thing, circling back to the Rangers, getting burned down Seth Rollins style. It's going to happen again. It's going to happen again if they don't put players around him. I'm not impressed. You want to impress me? Bring in pieces that can support a guy like LeBron and not guys that he wants that make absolutely no damn sense like Russell Westbrook. Bring in pieces that can help this team win games because you brought LeBron in thinking you're going to restore the Lakers to some previously discovered glory. And I ain't seen it. I haven't seen it. They won one championship, and at the time, everybody's like, oh, they won it in a bubble. And it's like, I was a Laker fan, and I was like, you know what? The criticism's valid. They won it in the bubble. Just like the Dodgers. They won the championship in the bubble. Win it outside of the bubble, and maybe I'll believe. I'm holding the Dodgers and the Lakers to the same standard. Because you had guys like Colin Cowherd out there saying, oh, L.A.'s the place of champions now. Dodgers and Lakers and Rams. The Rams won a championship in ceteris paribus with all things equal. The Dodgers and Lakers did not. And until they do, I can't take them seriously.
And the Rams won at home.
And the Rams won at home in their own stadium. So even that might not have been ceteris paribus. That might not have been all things being equal because that's the first time that's ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
So until the Dodgers and Lakers can actually do what they're supposed to do and win when they're expected to in an all things equal situation, I can't get excited about this. I can't sit there and say, oh, they brought LeBron back. That's great. No, I'm not impressed.
How would you feel if LeBron used his powers and was able to bring in Kevin Durant?
I don't know if I'm impressed about that either, because why am I going to Kevin Durant? Why do I want the Kevin Durant drama? Just like people saying, oh, he might bring in Kyrie Irving. Why do I want the Kyrie Irving drama? Why? They got enough drama as it is on that team.
Oh, they do, no doubt.
The owner had to pull a freaking Cersei Lannister to wrestle power from her own brother when their dad died. Now I got to deal with Russell Westbrook and possibly Kyrie or possibly Kevin Durant. How much more drama do you need in L.A.? It's bad enough it's already Hollywood. Really? Like, no. You want to impress me? Put a team together that doesn't have as much drama and win something when people expect you to. Then maybe I'll be impressed. Until then, the Lakers are still Bruno. And what about Bruno, Greg?
We don't talk about Bruno.
We don't talk about Bruno.
How do you feel after all this?
I feel better. I feel better.
See,
thank
I did
you.
This to help you.
You did.
You thought I did this to torture you, but I did this to help you.
Thank you for returning the favor, because I did that with you too, with the Mets and with Jacob deGrom. It's just, people are probably like, what the hell is going on right now? We were so happy when this show started. We got crazy at the end. This is true. We got crazy. Is this a thing? Does this to people? I thought I would probably go crazier about the top 10 annoying fan bases. Like, I didn't even blast Texas this much. It's crazy. Laker fans are probably going to hear this like that are friends of mine and be like, dude, you okay? No! No, I'm not okay. I'm not all right. I'm not all right. I'm so not all right, I've watched Winning Time like three times through already since the first run. I'm now watching Legacy, the Lakers documentary on Hulu. I'm on episode 2 of that. Like,
how is that?
Legacy's good. Winning Time, I loved. I loved it. For the cinematic purposes, I loved it. I know it's not 100% accurate as far as how they portrayed certain people. And I'm actually in the process of reading Showtime, the book that Jeff Perlman wrote that the show is based on. And that's a really fantastic book. I got like maybe 3 chapters left. I'm listening to it on audiobook. Actually, I was playing it in the car on my way here. They were talking about when they got swept by the Pistons in 89 in Kareem's last game. I'm on that chapter now.
Okay.
Loved Winning Time. I like Legacy right now because it's kind of similar to Winning Time. They're starting at Jerry Buss buying the organization, and they're telling the true accounts of it. And I'm like, okay.
They show a lot of like highlights and stuff?
I mean, there's some highlights, but there's a lot of behind-the-scenes talk. They have interviews with the actual people involved, like Magic Johnson, Jamal Wilkes, Jeannie Buss, Pat Riley's in there. They got people. They talked to Kareem. They got my goat in there. It's like they got everybody that's part of this. Not everybody, but a lot of the key people that were in there represented. Clearly, you can't get Jerry Buss because he's long since passed on.
Right.
Rest in peace. But the people that were there and are still around now, they got a good chunk of them contributing to this. And you get really good insight from Magic. You get really good insight from Jeannie Buss. Really good insight from Kareem and how this all really started. And I don't think people really realized that before Winning Time was a thing, Jerry Buss bought the organization, drafted Magic Johnson number one, hire a new coach because Jerry West up and quits, and they win the championship. Like,
yeah,
1 year. Like, that's not supposed to happen. But, like, there should be an expectation for fans for what's realistic. And then the Lakers did that at the end of the 70s, going into the 80s. That makes sense. I love watching it, though. And not only because I'm a Laker fan, but, you know, as an enterprising entrepreneur, I could admire how Jerry Buss really took a huge risk buying this team. He had to put up a lot of his own money and then put up a lot of value in real estate to buy the team from Jack Kent Cook. Like, he took a huge risk at this.
Right.
And there's a chance that if this fell apart and he didn't even make it to the NBA Finals, they could have taken a bath and lost a lot of money in a league that was already losing money. But in doing what he did, Jerry Buss not only changed the fortunes of his own franchise, he created the blueprint really for the NBA to become profitable. It's a really, really good watch. So if you get a chance, watch Legacy. It's good.
Okay. All right. Now that we've gotten everything off our chest.
We didn't even get through the whole list, actually.
No.
No, we did a lot.
We ran out of time.
In the meantime, if you're not following already, follow the show on social media at Sunday MORN Grind. You can follow us. Follow Greg at
The GFIN.
Follow me at Josh Taylor HD. And we'll be back at it next week. I'm hoping we'll be back at it next week because it'll be week 3 of preseason coming up. We'll talk about the week 2 game. We'll talk about the preface of the 3rd preseason game on the 28th of August against the Lions. And then, Greg, we'll be 2 weeks away from regular season football. But we'll also be closer to the backyard brawl. We'll talk about that, too.
You got it.
Here we go. In the meantime, this has been episode number 43, the Connor Sherry episode of the Sunday Morning Grind. We out!